I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the this room. Anything downstairs is up for grabs. This format is written for the across the street. There's no reason to go upstairs at any time for any reason. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this is meeting number 13. We're basically everything has led up to this day. We're doing the second half of step 12, and Judy and Jill are going to share with us tonight. What I'll do is I'll read a paragraph from the book. We're going to start on page 96, and I'll turn it over to one of them. Have you decided who's going first? You guys worked that out. Okay. Page 96.
Jill decided.
No.
Okay, on page 96. Suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else.
Okay, I'm Judy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Judy.
It's really nice to be here. It's great to be in this room tonight. I'm glad everybody made it and we got in just under the electrical wires here. I love this paragraph because it's very instructive, and I wish I could tell you I followed it to the letter, but I've done it out of trial and error instead of reading it and doing what it says, which is often the case. But suppose you're making your second visit to a man. So suppose I've had the initial contact with this person, and the next sentence is just critical. He's read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. And, you know, how many times have I not done that? Have I not expected that from the person on the other side of the table? And I can tell you I'm doing myself, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the other person a disservice if I don't have that expectation that when you come for help, have read the book, and be ready. Because over and over and over again in our literature, we're instructed to not spend time with people that are not here for the same reason that we're here. And it's just a fact that if somebody isn't ready, they're not ready, and you can't make them ready. I couldn't will myself sober. I can't will you sober. And even though I think you might need it based on what you've told me so far, there's not a thing I can do to bring you to the point of being willing to accept what's written in this book. So, and my experience was very much like that. I didn't get a sponsor for a long time because I knew if I asked for a sponsor, I would have to do what the sponsor told me to do, and I didn't want to do it. So I just, you know, sat here and went in and out of meetings and kind of played around a bit, and for probably the first year from the time I was first exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous until I showed up ready. And I drank one time in that year, and there was nobody that was going to convince me. But I'll tell you, a lot of things happened to me in that year from the first time I walked into an AA meeting until the year had passed and I finally really surrendered and was willing to show up and let somebody tell me what to do and actually do what they suggested. That kind of willingness can't be produced, conjured up, demanded. And now, you know, I changed sponsors a few years ago, and she asked me exactly what it says there. Are you willing to do this, work the steps, go through the book? And I've been in AA a long time, and I had to be willing to do that. I had to be willing to say, yes, I'm willing to do that with you. I'm willing to set aside everything I think I know about the book of AA and everything I think I know that I've learned over the time I've been sober and follow the direction that you're going to give me. And that is, in my experience, the foundation for having a spiritual experience, because I can't have a spiritual experience if I bring my own set of ideas, conceptions, prejudices, demands, expectations into something. If I want to go somewhere new, I can't bring all that. I have to let all that go, and I have to sit in front of somebody and let them teach me, guide me, and lead me. So I think it's critical. You know, it's been in my experience that's critical, a critical point that we, as a fellowship, need to adhere to. Thanks.
I'm Jill, an alcoholic.
Jill.
Okay. The neatest thing about this book is there are instructions. And it doesn't say when I heard carry the message, I tried to come up with my own message for a long time. Nobody followed it. People were going around like, what? Anyways, but in here, there's some things that helped me to decide, to help me talk to a newcomer. And one of them is to when I talk to them, find out, how serious are you? Do you really want to do this? And sometimes it comes down to reading something like the doctor's opinion. You know, are you willing to do that? Are you willing to listen to some feedback? And a lot of times there's less sentence here says, do not insist if you prefer to consult someone else. I used to be so crushed when people would prefer to consult someone else. And I would think it was something that was me. And so I tried to change my experience around a little bit so it sounded a little bit more attractive to you. And it's like, and I would get lost and tangled up. And so sometimes my bad experience is a big help to people too. But what I've seen in this program is when I'm honest, my experience, I can listen to someone and hear they're saying a lot of the same things that I'm saying. And what for me usually happens is people are scared to do this. If I do something that I don't know where it's going, what will happen to me? So it gives me some I'm going to say ammunition. That sounds like I'm going to shoot someone. But it gives me some empathy for them about where they're coming from and what's going through their heart. Because getting sober is scary. I knew how to get drunk. I did that for a long time. Getting sober was really scary. And what happened to me when I first came in is people talked about the book. And I remember getting the book and reading it by myself at home and getting lost and getting drunk again and staying out for a while. So it was only when I could really face that I've got a problem I can't solve by myself and to ask for some help. And then to be okay with the advice I'm given, and that comes from sitting in meetings, listening to people. And I wound up asking the first lady that tried to help me the first time I came in, because every time she spoke, I got quiet on the inside. So that gave me some confidence that when I knew that I really needed help in this program, that's who I went to, because I felt comfortable that she was telling me the truth and she could actually help me walk through this. Thanks, that's all I have.
Thanks, Kelly. We're going to continue on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give that often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. I like that that's one word sentence. Nonsense, period. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Judy?
It's a powerful statement. So in the first paragraph, we're being asked to look at the principle that we're living by here. Are we selling something in the first paragraph we just read? Am I selling sobriety? And the answer is no, I'm not selling sobriety. And then the next thing is, am I providing a service to people who need help? And the answer to that is no, I'm not. I'm not providing a service. What I'm providing is experience with a spiritual program of recovery that made it possible for me to not take one drink one day at a time. That's it. That's all I have. If you want something else, you'll have to go somewhere else. So you have to be careful with this. When I came to AA, I believed that it was your responsibility to find me a babysitter, figure out what I was going to do about my finances, give me marriage counseling. I thought this was all your job. That's what you're here for, right? To help me. And I expected that. So this is what the lady said to me when I said, I really need a babysitter. I just can't come to meetings if I don't have a babysitter. And she said, we'll teach you how to get a babysitter, but we're not going to provide a babysitter for you. That's not our job. And they did. They taught me how to do that, and I've taught other women how to do it and how to take care of their business and how to take care of being able to show up here without this interfering with their life or their life interfering with this. And it's a walk that, I've learned a lot of things in AA. If you're going to give somebody money, don't expect to get it back. You know, it's gone. Forget it. You're not getting it back. If you're going to buy them groceries, buy them groceries. Don't think they're going to buy you groceries when you need groceries. So, you have to walk into everything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have had to with my eyes open, and I've had sponsors that have kept my eyes open. Okay, if you're going to do that, this is what that is. If you're going to make the decision to do that, then you walk into it with your eyes wide open, and you take the consequences. And if you do it, this is probably what's going to happen, and if you do this path, this is probably where you're going to end up. What do you want to do? And they've always left it in my hands and asked me to pray about it and find my right path. But what happens when we get too far into trying to help people with things that are none of our concern is that we get distracted off of our path. And anytime I'm on a spiritual path, there's always going to be a, you know, avalanche of distractions that are going to come to try to push me off the path. And I've learned, the one thing I have learned in the time I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous is don't pay attention to the distractions. Took me years to even get that idea and to appreciate its demonstration in my life and to now not allow distractions, and I still get caught at times, to take me off of the path, take my focus off. What principle am I standing on? What is the focus of what am I doing? What is my purpose here? And to stay on those things. So if we get too far into solving people's physical comfort problems, and we don't teach them to put their hand in the hand of God, which is in the process of working the steps, then we're not doing our jobs. And that's what that paragraph has says to me and has meant to me in Alcoholics Anonymous.
When I think about this paragraph, there's a saying that I used to hear a lot, and my sponsor actually said it to me, your sobriety is your responsibility. And in this paragraph, when I think about it, it's not a question of giving, it's when and how to give. I always thought my ego kind of jumps up and go, I can do this, I can do that. Well, I can do it, but is it really good for the other person? And that's where really talking to my sponsor at times has been my saving grace, because what I want to do sometimes is look good and get a pat on the back, and so I may be off on the wrong foot right off. So if I've got a sponsor and I'm using my sponsor the way I'm supposed to, I'll be able to sidestep some of the traps, because some of the things that we get asked to do really sound pretty good. You know, they sound like, boy, that would be a nice thing to do. You know, take on somebody else's children. Like, yeah, bring them over for the weekend. It's like, you're not learning a whole lot of responsibility. So my sponsor, when she would say that to me, your sobriety is your responsibility, I had to get over myself and say, but how do I do this? Oh my God, I need a job. I haven't worked in ages. I got canned for the last job I had. How on earth am I going to do this? And so she's there to walk with me and to help me to find the solutions to that, and possibly a solution I've never thought of before, and say, well, why don't you try this? And one thing about a sponsor is I've asked this person to look at my life, put her perspective on my life without any emotional attachments, a clear set of eyes on my life. And a sponsor sees things that I could never see. You know, I'm so caught up in the emotional twist of my life that I can't see any of it. So when I've asked someone to do that, I'm admitting to myself that I don't see it. I see it through emotions. I always see it through emotions. And when logic, when intellect and emotions come into conflict, my emotions always win. They always go, run! Fast! Far away! And I've stumbled a lot in the program by trying to take on people's problems and giving them advice that I should never have given. And it plays out very badly. We've got another paragraph, so I'm not going to say a whole lot about it now. Plays out very badly. And it does more harm to the other person than it did good. You know, it's like something that seems like it should have been a good thing to do, given marital advice and stuff like that. Ooh. Wrong. I mean, I've got two divorces under my belt. Why would I think I can do that? But people come to me and I think I can see it well. So this is the whole thing about all of this is we laugh, but a lot of it is deadly. I mean, it really is deadly. Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. I neglected to read the last two sentences of that paragraph. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Then we're going to continue on page 98. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, He should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Judy?
Okay. Again, you know, we're asked to consider what principle we're standing on. Everything that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous in every step is based on a principle. And here, the surrender to God's will instead of our will is really, really worked out. They talk about argument and fault finding not being the way to go. And, you know, you may read this and think, well, yeah, initially. But later, when I'm sober and have my capacity for thinking back, and, you know, and I'm smarter than everybody in the room and, you know, all that, you know, what I failed to realize over and over again was that that is willfulness born in ego, just like Jill was just talking about. So this whole principle of argument and fault finding is not the way that we live our lives, and that the greatest demonstration of that is in our homes. I wish I could tell you that I had had that wrestled pretty good when I first came to AA, but I didn't. And to be absolutely honest, I didn't want to be where I was, and consequently, I'm not. So I was not in, and this is a good example. If I'm not ready to accept what's written on this in this book and do what's written in this book, I don't get the results. And I wasn't willing to accept that. I didn't want to be in the marriage and in the home I was in, and I'm not. So I can, you know, for years I blame that on him, and I can blame it on all kinds of circumstances and things like that, but the truth of the matter is I didn't want to be there, period. And it didn't seem to matter to me. It didn't matter enough to me to want to follow this principle no matter what. And that's always the question. You know, again, it's with eyes wide open. I couldn't tell myself the truth about it. And there's, you know, consequences to pay for that. But it still shows me that I always have to be asking myself the question. You know, I'm much, much more willing to back down these days than I was when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I was fighting mad when I came here. I was really mad I couldn't drink. I was so mad. And I was really mad at him because he could drink. And he was getting away with it in my mind. So there was all kinds of dynamics going on there. But fault finding and retaliation and argument, I was into that. And I wasn't going to let it put it down. But this says that if I'm going to, I have adopted that as a way of life now. But I didn't do it in the beginning. So what does it mean to adopt it as a way of life now? Well, it for me means that I have to trust absolutely in the power that gets us sober, that there is a power, it is greater than me, and it's always operating. So I'm not doing, it's not that I'm not doing something, because that takes an incredible amount of persistence and fortitude to trust that what's in front of me is exactly the way it's supposed to be, and it is not my job to fault find and argue. I don't care. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. Circumstances are totally irrelevant. That's the question. Are you fault finding and arguing, or are you surrendering? And that has to be the case every day that I breathe, in every relationship I'm in every environment I'm in. Do I do that perfectly? No. Do I know that that's the principle I'm trying to pursue and and put underneath of me? Yeah, I do know. And the reason for that is because I will not successfully gain an ability to depend on God without that. I have to surrender my fault-finding and my argument and retaliation. That's what I have to give up to have a relationship with God. So if I don't give those things up, I don't get a relationship with God. I can talk about having one, and I can read about having one. But if I don't give those things, that's the price. I have to give up the booze, and I have to give that up and live on that principle. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, this paragraph has, I can tell you how to do it very poorly and then how to do it very well. I was fairly new in the program, and my sponsor gave me some advice on a situation. A lady I was working with had some children, and there was a husband involved, and he was kind of a rageaholic little guy. And she told me to step out of it. Step out of it. Talk about this, you know, reading the book and that sort of stuff. Stay out of it. And I kept going, boy, those kids are going to get hurt and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't step out of it. And what happened was she had told her husband, my sponsor said, and they wound up both getting mad as heck at me, eventually getting drunk, but and it just was a mess. And it was a situation where that tugged at my heartstrings because there were children involved. And I kept thinking, I got to do something, because I don't trust God a whole lot at that time. I didn't, and I still have a problem with that today. You know, to pray and to ask Him for guidance and to pray and ask Him to intervene and pray. And so when I think I've got to ram my will into somebody else's life, this was what we were talking about before, it played out very badly, very badly. But I got some great experience, right? Not good. But what this is happening, when it says here, argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague, what happened for me is I heard this a lot, leave those other people alone. And finally, if I don't give this up, I have such an emotional hangover from doing this that is horrible. So little by little, I give this up because it feels so bad. And I think that's the game plan here, is I'm going to ask God every morning to direct my thoughts and actions and mold me to what I should be. He's going to make that horrible fault finding and the stuff I like so much feel so bad that I'm going to be willing to give it up. Because if it felt good in any way, ain't giving it up. But the second part of this is little by little, the family will see their defects and admit them. People that I've been involved with, my stepchildren, my biological family, they have seen and made their own judgments more about the way I've walked than what anything I've said. I haven't had anything that I could actually tell them that would have had the impact on them. And so when I'm sponsoring people, I try to tell them the same thing. You have to walk this way. You have to do this, and they'll follow. They'll see it, and they'll be drawn to you. They may ask you, they may not. But when you do that, what it's asking me to do is give up my little plans and designs. And that's a hard one because, you know, I got some great plans, and you should know about them. So I've got that little bit of grandiosity there. But when I look at somebody else's life, I've got to give up what I think I see too. Because so often I see it, but I don't see the whole picture. I have to realize when I'm sponsoring someone, I see one half of the story. And I know me, when I was getting sober, the half that I showed other people didn't look too bad. Because I could make it sound like that other half was crap, you know? So very little, I have to realize and say, God, you know, just help me to stick to the principles here. Help me to direct people the way I've been directed. And that is always to, have you prayed about this? Have you done your inventory? Let's look at your part, not even your part. I hate to say that, because let's look at what you're doing. Why are you doing it? And if we can get to that point, then a little bit of truth comes out. And this is a big part of this is surrender, but a bigger part of it is the truth. Because if I can see the truth about me, I can see why I need God and why I need to do this. Because if I don't do it, I'm going to always be led back to a drink. And I had been over and over. Thanks, that's all I have.
I like you said, a little bit of truth will come out. Isn't that how the truth comes out? Just yeah. A little bit of time. We're going to continue on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
This is another one of my favorites too, because when I had one of, I've had several crises in my sober life, and my first crisis in my sober life, when my whole life got rearranged, I read that paragraph every day like my life depended on it, because it did. And I just kept reading it because I didn't have, I was just unsettled to my core. I mean, I can't think of the right words, but it was an extreme adjustment that was made in my life, and I had to stay sober and show up and be okay. And I had to really believe this in a way that I'd never believed it before. And that's the belief that comes from trusting that my life depends on it. If I don't believe it, I'm going to lose my life. And that if I want my life, I need to accept and believe what's written here. So I read that every day. And every day in the day when I got unsettled, I picked the book up and I read that. Because that was God speaking to me, telling me that's the promise. Here's their promise. There's promises all through this book that if you will do this, no matter what condition or circumstance you find yourself in, if you will make an effort to turn to the guy next to you and hand off whatever it is you have that will help them, then if you take care of them, I'll take care of you. That's the way my sponsors have always said it to me. You know, that's God's commitment to me. You take care of them, I'll take care of you. And it's been the case the whole time I've been sober. So I held on to those words, every one of them, pretty tight. Like a lot of the parts of the book, I've held on to really tight in the times when I had the least faith and was really unsettled. So if you're just starting out in sobriety, things will unsettle you as you walk this walk, but there's not ever a necessity to take a drink, which has been the miracle of this to me. I was really amazed after I went through that, and I've been through a couple of other things too since then that I would mark as identify as mile markers, but that was the first one, and and when I was about 6 years sober, and it was an experience that absolutely took me to my knees and made me have a faith that I never knew was possible to have.
Uh-huh. Okay. The greatest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is I can see God working in other people's lives in an instant, in my sponsees, and I can see it. And my sponsor can see it working in my life. And sometimes I think that half of our job is to play it back when things aren't going well, you know, to say, you know, look at what happened here. Because a lot of times I'll think, oh my gosh, this can't work this time. This is a big one. And that's all fear driven. It's just like, oh my God. When I'd been working with some people, and I had to go to, my father was dying, and this would be really sad if he was a nice person, but he wasn't even a nice person. So this was a bigger challenge. And my sponsor said, you need to suit up and show up and go up there and just be. And I thought, how am I going to manufacture those kind of feelings? And I did it long enough and persistent enough, and I talked to her on the phone enough that when I could do that, when I could just be there and take all the conditions off being there and put out of my mind the wrongs I thought he had done me, some wonderful things happened. It was amazing. It was one of those times when I could really see, I was surrendered enough that I could really see God working in my life. So I know that works personally, but I see it much more clearly when I'm working with another person, and I'll go, oh my God, and I'll say, did you see what happened? You know, and they're like, what? Yeah. And it will be like, the answers come. The more I practice this, and then I have to pass it on to a person I sponsor and says, you know, if you'll pray about this and take your hands off it, and just really get settled here. And sometimes it's as simple as helping to direct someone to do something different in their lives, you know. Go to a movie by yourself. I mean, wow, first time someone told me to do that was like, what? You know, I gotta have company. But learning to walk a new walk. And sometimes some of the things have sounded so like, what? Why would I want to do that? Then after I've done it, I can help someone else do the same thing. And a lot of times it's like to take my dependence off all the people around me and all the things that I've been so good at depending on my whole life, thinking that I've got to secure myself in some way. I pass it on to someone else and say, you know, you can, God's going to give you everything you need to walk this walk. And so a lot of times the help that comes to me when I'm thinking about how I can help someone else is something really simple, but it'll be something completely different than I know that person's ever done before. And it's another way of giving up our plans, but the thing about this is that it's persistent. I honestly had in my heart that I would get to come here, do this once, graduate with honors. Then I might be able to teach it, you know. But the whole thing is every day I have to come to a point where I will surrender. Continue. And more and more unfolds. I was thinking when I was coming over here tonight, one of the things that unfolded, and this is going to sound really goofy and really stupid, but for years, I would leave my house early in the morning to go to the parking garage, to get the parking garage first, because it was a special parking space I liked. And I wanted to be there before anyone else and get my parking space. And I hate to tell you that I would beat traffic to get through there, to get that parking space. And I was thinking this morning when I drove by the parking space, you know, God, it's been a long time since I had to have that parking space. And it was open, and I got to park in it. And I sat there going like, whoa! And so it can be, and it sounds simple, but those kind of things drove me crazy. Those are things I went after. And it's like, how can you ever learn to give up that stuff? It's not even an issue. But the bigger issue is the drink isn't an issue today. But I can cloud my perception with a lot of little things that I still like to hang on to. And this is awful. But if I walk it every day, and I have to walk it with the people I'm working with, I can't just say, oh, you do this, you do that. And because it's bull, and people know it's bull. You know, if you're not walking this walk, they used to say, if it's not AA, it goes. And what goes usually first is my attention, my reading, whatever. And I slowly will drift away. And I pay a high price for that. Every time I've done that, I will go down into a pit that my sponsor has to pull me out of. Or, you know, that I'm lucky I've gotten out of the pit every time. But I'm less willing today to step off that ledge into that pit. But I'll try it once in a while. In a heartbeat. Thanks.
Thanks. All right, continuing on page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Judy?
Right. Assuming we're spiritually fit, well, let's say we can do all sorts of things we're not supposed to do. So I can do all kinds of things I'm not supposed to do. Have patience, be considerate of you, not want to retaliate, not argue. I mean, these are things I'm not supposed to do because, let me tell you, my whole life was just eaten up with this stuff. Mm-hmm. That's all I did. I mean, I was just, as soon as I woke up in the morning, I'm thinking about who did what to me and what I need to do to make that right and how I'm going to make them do this and how I'm going to do that and what's how I'm going to put the world back together. And then, of course, always at the end of the day, it was all had gone to a bad place. And I would then now have my reason for sitting down and sitting in the bar across the street for, God, hours. Oh, my God, hours and hours till 2 in the morning, get in the subway and go home, sleep for 4 hours, come back to work. Oh, my God, it was a horrible existence. And I was caught in it, and I could not get out of it. It was horrible. I don't ever want to have that experience again. So, you know, this is about, we can go any place where there's drinking. Well, the reason that we can is because we've taken care of all these things I just mentioned. You know, we're not running around in an angry tirade. We're not thinking the world's against us at every turn. But, I mean, I've got to work at that. I can't just wake up in the morning and be like that. It just doesn't happen, you know. There's a lot of maintenance that has to go into me showing up okay enough to be in your company and not want to kill you. It's terrible to say, but that's my nature. And I'm not free of that nature if I don't give that nature up. You know, and this is voluntary. I have to surrender that nature in order to get the spiritual condition that allows me to be any place, anywhere, for any reason, at any time. And if I'm to be on the firing line of life and do God's will and be able to hear God's direction, I have to do that. That's the formula. If I don't stick to the formula, I'm going to be off on some tirade. I haven't had a drink in a long time. It rarely comes to mind, except when I'm in a meeting and we're talking about drinking. And I get to relive in my mind all those wonderful escapades I just described. And 'cause that's the way it was. I mean, I can tell you more stories and dress it up, but that's the way it was, you know. Drinking till 2, trying to pull myself back together so I could go back to work or go show up wherever I'm supposed to show up, feeling like crap, throwing up. I mean, this is the way I lived. So, and pissed off, because it was obviously somebody's fault that I was in that condition. Because I was drinking at you, you know. I spent all those hours in that bar drinking at my boss with my coworker. How many hours of my life I wasted doing that. So, you know, we meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. So what does that mean? Does that mean I'm always thinking about alcohol? Not necessarily. An alcoholic mind is a self-obsessed mind. If I cannot stop thinking about what I'm mad about, who's trying to do whatever to me, if I'm enclosed in here, I'm suffering from untreated alcoholism. Doesn't matter what the subject matter is. That's untreated alcoholism. That's an alcoholic mind, and I can voluntarily go for that. You know, the God that I understand and have operating in my life, this is totally voluntary. You can surrender to the extent that you want to surrender and be at peace, or you can be in a, you know, tied up in a knot. That's your choice. So those two things have been absolutely critical to me to, you know, Jill mentioned earlier emotional hangovers. You know, what causes that? What causes me to not be able to sleep, not let something go, not be able... It's just this absolute obsession with I'm right. And my sponsor would say to me, you have got to consider that you could be wrong. You have to consider that. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what the details are. You have to open your mind up enough to consider that you could be wrong. Please do that. And that takes prayer. I can't do that by myself. I mean, I got to be on my knees praying for that. Sometimes laying down on my face praying for that. Because I won't let go. You know, that's my nature. So if I'm going to live free of a drink, I have to be free of me. And I can only be free of me if I surrender to God. And I can only surrender to God if I identify that I absolutely have to have God or I'm not going to be okay. Thanks.
When I read this, assuming he's spiritually fit, a big breakthrough in the program came to me when I realized some of my character defects, my anger, and my self-righteous indignation are really intoxicating. Man, they can pump me up. A good anger can just get me, they can get just as high on being really, and then afterwards I just, so that's not real spiritually fit. But what it is until, I listened to Joe and Charlie one time, and one of them said this, and it's really great, until my behavior becomes objectionable to me, I probably won't do anything about it. So I wandered around in AA for a long time with a lot of self-righteous indignation, a lot of quiet anger. I wasn't in your face angry. I was just thinking it. And every fiber of my being, the look on my face was like, I got a humility one too, but that's so what you can do is you can't pretend that you're not something. If I'm trying to pretend I'm not angry, I'm rigid, and it comes across. It's just, we make terrible liars. It's sometimes the things I'm really going to lie to you about are things that are going to kill me. That's what's really sad about this whole thing is it's something that that's going to put a drink in my hand again, and it's going to destroy me. But rather than get honest about it, I'm going to say, what's wrong with you? Nothing. And, it's like, that's crazy. So, but if I will surrender to this, and I'll ask for the help, and I have been at times, God, just please take this from me. Let me see this for what it really is. And then I get a little bit of insight into what it is. If I'm so angry, I won't let go of something, or so just tied up in something, I'm thinking about it all night long, it's usually driven by fear about what's going to happen. My fear eats my lunch all the time, and fear always makes me angry. It just it's the biggest fuel for my anger of anything that I do. So when I'm seeing other people that are having a problem with something, I can see it in them. Instead of saying, what are you so mad at? I go, what are you so afraid of? And boy, that opens a door, because a person might be able to say, like, ooh, that's like an unexpected question. And it opens up a little bit of a little chink. I always said for years, I was such a bad drunk, and I came in here so dead to everything around me. There wasn't much that got through to me. And my home group and my sponsor knew how to get through to me. They sent me up to the nursing home to talk to an old man who'd been sober for eons. And over that winter, that relationship with that man did exactly what this book is talking about. He talked to me. They talk about the language of the heart. He just talked to me. And slowly, I started caring more for another person than I did for the anger and the rage that was in me. And that opened a little tiny door where I could start hearing what people were trying to tell me. So what happens in these rooms is nothing short of a miracle. I was a very damaged, bad drunk that couldn't get sober for anything for years. And I come here and something happens that changes me. And the only people that can give it to me is with people that it has done for them. They've been changed. So they know what to give me. They know how to hand me just little bits of this or little bits of that, knowing that if I'll do it, something's going to happen to me. And I'm a walking testament of that. I'm not the person that walked in these rooms, thank heaven. Because that was not a pretty sight. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's see where we are on time here. All right. 5 minutes left.
Okay.
We're going to continue on page 102. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they're not to change their habits on your account. At the proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed.
Okay, so, gee, to show up in that condition, I would have to have had something to eat the day before and all the days prior, and had some sleep, and had some meetings underneath of me, and talked to my sponsor, and done my inventory, and made amends if I needed to make amends, and done some reading every day, and then I can be free of me. And the way they describe this, you know, if it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. Be enthusiastic. I can't be any of those things if I'm caught up in me. And if I'm going to be caught up in me, that means don't read the book, don't talk to the sponsor, don't go to the meetings, don't write an inventory, forget the amends, and for God's sakes, don't pray. So, you know, those are the things. This is what makes us, transforms us on a daily basis. We're not transformed permanently. We're transformed in a 24-hour period. That's it. That's all we get. That's why we talk about that one day at a time thing. You can't live walk in a spiritual condition that you create, that you invested in 10 years ago. If you didn't invest in it this morning, you don't have it. So, that's pretty much all I'm going to say about that. Jill.
You got a couple minutes, Jill.
Okay, I'm going to just use it to read this last sentence. Yeah?
Please.
After all, our problems are of our own making. The bottle was a symbol. Besides, we've stopped fighting anything or anyone. We have to. That's surrender. I didn't know that for a long time. But, we keep on the firing line of life. I'm only going to say one thing about this. I was at a wedding this last year, a year ago in May, and they were drinking, they were having a lot of fun, and the thing that came out of it was my ex-husband said, I don't remember you being this nice. I wasn't.
That's right, you're right, I wasn't.
You're going to cap it there?
All right. That's right.
We're going to pass the seven tradition baskets. Every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. Lost my place. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Does anybody have any AA-related announcements? Nobody? All right. We've got two announcements, and there's flyers. There's literature on the coffee table out there in the foyer. Pardon? Oh, you guys got these because they're in the chairs. You don't need me to read them. The potluck is next week, and we should be, hopefully if we have power, it'll be next Monday night over in the church across the parking lot, 6 o'clock, potluck. Some people have been saying that's free food. It's not free food, it's a potluck. Bring something. Or not. You can eat. It's not a big deal. And 7 o'clock speaker meeting. That's next week. And then there's flyers in your chair about the May 9th Big Book Study, which isn't on a Monday. It's on a Friday or Saturday. So that's that. Nobody else? Nothing? Zip? Nada? Hey. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? And if there's anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety, could we just have your first name just to welcome you, not to embarrass you? Anybody in their first 30 days?
I'm Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, hey, Stephanie. Welcome.
Welcome.
I'm Scott, alcoholic.
Scott. Welcome.
Anybody else?
David, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
Welcome. Welcome. All right. So I pointed out the literature already. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Does anybody from the home group know who's going to be up here at the end? Jason and Ryan. Jason and Ryan will be up at the table after the meeting. If you have specific questions about sponsorship, feel free to come up and talk to them after the meeting, or anybody really. Just grab somebody and ask for help. That's everything. I'd like to thank Judy and Jill for sharing tonight. Thank all who participated. For those of you who don't know, there was a power failure over across the way. We didn't even know if we were going to be able to get in here tonight. The Dominion Power trucks left the site at like 6:45. We didn't even know if we were going to be able to be here, but power came on and in we came. That's why there's no coffee tonight. But so thanks everybody for helping us set up, helping us clean up. All are welcomed and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight and attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held as usual at Plaza Azteca. Plaza del Sol, hello. That's why I never say the name, because I have no confidence in it. But just go down Colonial, 22nd Street, right? Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. 22nd and Colonial Plaza what?
Del Sol.
Yeah, of the sun. Yeah, okay. And is anyone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Please.
My name's Diane. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Could I just ask you guys to these yellow flyers on the thing next week, take them out of here. Let's not take them back to your home groups, get them out in the community. They're not going to do us any good here next week. We all connected? We all linked up? Tyrone, would you lead us in the Lord's Prayer, please?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread,